This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's December the 1st, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, Republican leaders in Washington say the lame duck session is unlikely to include some very important agricultural legislation, and a Purdue economist says the next farm bill will lean heavily on green payments and push for a more comprehensive energy title. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, we'll be joined to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast by Midwestern Regional Climate Center Director Steve Hilberg. It all happens on this Friday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Chip Jorstad in Morris at 815-941-3706. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
In Chicago, on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. December corn futures, 374, were off 3 cents today. The March contract at 387, down 3.5, and the May at 391.25, down 2.5 of the day. July futures at 394.75 were down 3.25. Next year's December contract at 360.25, it was off 1.25 for the afternoon on a Friday. Soy complex January beans 677, they were off 8.5 on the settlement price. The March at 692, down 8.25, and the May futures at $7 even were down 7.75. November beans at 726.75 were off 4.25 for the day. December bean meal at 188.40, off $5 even. December bean oil at 29.23, and it was a nickel higher. December wheat futures at $5 and the settlement price down 2 cents. The March futures off 3/4 at 520.75. From the Mercantile Exchange, January feeder cattle at 96.97.5. They were down 90 cents today. December live cattle down 20 at 85.50, and December lean hogs down 55 cents at $61.12.5. The outside markets trading the crude oil January contract last trade at $63.45 a barrel. They're up 32 cents at this hour. The dollar at 82.51, that's down 0.44. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 12,132, now down 89 points for the afternoon. And December gold futures at $644.70 are down $2.20 for the day.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hey there, Todd. Happy winter to you.
Oh, yeah, I know. Isn't that the case?
A lot of guys in the listening area have no power right now, so hopefully they're listening to us on battery-operated radios or in the truck.
Yeah, I hope so, and that may be the place that they're trying to keep warm, or they're out trying to find fuel to man kerosene heaters or something, because it's pretty cold out there, and it's going to stay that way. And I think Ameren has a ton of customers out of from a corridor that runs from St. Louis all the way to Bloomington. 250,000 or something like that is something I read along the way during the day. But I was just doing my normal routine on Friday, putting the Illini Farm Report together. So I don't have the actual facts and figures, but there are a lot of people that are out of power. And if you are one of those, try to stay warm. If you know one of them, try to help them stay warm too. Hey, I was taking a look at what was happening at the Chicago Board of Trade today this afternoon. One of the things that piqued my interest was the sell-off that occurred in the soybean meal for the day. It was down $5. What happened there?
Well, we talked to Chicago after the close, and there was a very heavy day in the oil meal spreading. That was the major feature. A lot of it goes back to the idea that the traders saw the census crush report and wanted to protect their oil share, but not necessarily their meal share. So they kind of read into the report, it sounds like to us, Todd, that the oil stocks, even though they were higher than estimates, still able to hold on to their longs because they think the biodiesel demand's really, really good still. But they didn't want to keep so many longs in the meal because those stocks were higher also. So they kind of diversified out, kept their meal and let go of their kept their oil and let go of their meal.
So just more of a repositioning than anything else that was fundamentally with a fundamental factor in terms of crop sizes around the globe.
Yeah, that's right. That's what it sounded like to us. In fact, you had kind of a bunch of different things coming at you from all directions. You had the Gulf basis in beans slip 8.5 to 9.5 cents today down in Louisiana, but yet you also heard news that maybe China was in for almost 10 cargoes of U.S. beans, some of those in the Pacific Northwest, but a lot of them also in the Gulf. And so between that and the light volume in the wheat and corn, we suspect that it was just repositioning.
And then let's talk a little bit more about beans, because they did touch that $7 level yesterday, and the May contract today was at 7.07 and a half, settled $7 even. Jan's at 6.77. Next year's November's, of course, at 7.26 and three quarters. Are they just merely trying to stay up with what's been happening in the corn pit, or are they really going to make a push to put more acres in the ground, for instance, in Brazil? And have you talked to them enough to know how they go about making that decision? Here, of course, most people in the Midwest decide between corn and soybeans. There are other parts of our nation where it might be cotton and corn and soybean, or wheat and corn. What's the decision process that happens in South America?
Well, for the most part, because a lot of Brazil in particular is more of a barter, where they, you know, set up agreements for their seed costs, and it's bartered in exchange for seed sales, and they get their chemicals latched in with that, and their fungicide payments and spraying latched into that. It's a lot more barter than it is currency, and so a lot of the decision-making goes back to what their financing will allow them to take. And this year, they would let them take a little bit more on the beans because of the costs and or the prices at the Board of Trade. But I think they were a little bit more aggressive on hedging those prices, and they were made to be more aggressive on hedging those prices to preserve and take care of their cost structure and the hit they took last year. So there's probably some in the bean price to try and encourage more of those later planted areas of Brazil to gain some more acres. We don't think it's a lot of the reason why the beans are having the strength they're having right now. I tell you, when we look at the fundamentals and we talk to the Chicago traders, whether they're position traders or fund-related, you know, commodity trading advisors, most of them are saying to us that it is almost solely technical and it's the longer-term charts, and we would have to say we understand that. Now, the one fundamental that really came out big time in the last few weeks has been this dollar, and in our last newsletter we ran a dollar and soybean overlay chart. And there is a really nice inverse relationship between the two, that when the dollar goes up, the beans usually tend to go down and vice versa. So there's probably some fundamentals there with the dollar. But, again, you wouldn't be able to attach that probably, except for the last 2 weeks when the spot dollar has lost about 4%. Most of what's been going on in the beans up until the last 2 weeks has probably been more technical and following that corn and wheat up, that a rising tide lifts all boats.
As you talk to your broker and trader friends that have been in the business for a long time, and I know you've been watching the markets for years now, with the influx of the funds and the big dollars that have come in over the last 3 years, have you been able to discern much of a change in the way the market works? You mentioned, for instance, that it's all technically driven at this point. Is that part and parcel of the dollars that would be coming in from the East Coast?
Well, I think the day traders in particular are at more of a disadvantage than they used to be. They don't know Joe down there with the large commercial firm, or they don't know Jim over there with the commodity trading advisor that's been around for 15 years. Now there's more of a blank and more of a blind there, that they can't see exactly who's doing what. And I was just remarking with a friend of mine that's been trading up there for 20 years that he, you know, sees some orders go into the pits. They can tell those are the commercially affiliated orders. The bigger commercially affiliated orders still go into the open outcry for the most part. But when it comes to funds and some of the investment groups that have not been up there traditionally at the Board of Trade trading, they'll do that all in electronic, and they'll cut their orders into small pieces, so it's very hard to track. And the electronic orders and the electronic order entry system, he was remarking to me, that it's very hard to tell where the bid and offer is after a couple strikes, after, you know, a half or three quarters or a penny of trade. It's very hard to see who's bidding and who's offering. And so for them, the day trader, it's almost impossible for them to trade much more than just the first two strikes, the first two bids or first two offers out. So they're limited. And, you know, he made the conjecture that, well, with the mercantile exchange buying the Board of Trade, in a couple of years, I may have to learn to either go over to the mercantile exchange and trade the live cattle pits, which are still open, outcry, or I'm going to just become a position trader, but I'm probably going to have to change my line of work and how I do my business.
Okay.
So it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. What do we know from other exchanges that are operating and have been for operating for a while electronically? And I know about how it differs from the open outcry. For instance, I understand what the difference for that trader was because you told us that. But from the farmer's end, from your end, on this side of the market, is having the electronic trade useful to you, or is it a hindrance? Is it just different than the way you used to work, or do you don't see it much at all from your side?
The biggest issue, the biggest problem we have is the technicals. It is very hard, and we wrote about this in the newsletter as well, because we've had a heck of a time, Todd, checking these oscillators like the stochastics and the RSIs, and even the moving averages. When you combine the side-by-side trade with the electronic trade in your charts, and you ask the computer to give you both quotes and combine the two, overnight and day trade, how many times have we seen the last month where the overnight goes down sharply but the day trade doesn't do anything but stay steady or go higher? And so the oscillators and the moving averages are much different when you compare the charts where you combine both trades versus where you just keep the open outcry out there. And so we have a heck of a time technically discerning which to follow right now. And so that's what's made our job a lot harder for the farmer customer and for the longer-term spec trader that we work with.
Yeah.
That's a real tough nut to crack right now. We don't know which way it's going to go. Everybody in Chicago that we respect has told us that the electronic is winning out on the open outcry, and it's just a matter of time before the open outcry gets shut down.
Well, in your opinion, will it be easier once you have just one platform?
Yes, it will. Yeah, it really will, because then everybody will be on the same page, because you've got guys trading just the electronic only and guys trading just the open outcry only on their technicals. You know, my friend that I was talking about today, he trades a one-minute chart when he's down there. You know, we're used to daily, weekly, monthly charts. He trades a one-minute chart, and he'll trade mainly the day trading chart or the open outcry chart, but even that's starting to get harder and harder.
You know, I have one more question on this, and then we'll move on. And this is just on the numbers themselves, since the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange are private companies now. Do you think that they should be that? Who do you think the numbers belong to? I know that they charge for them, but should we be able to get them electronically rather than a 10-minute delay on a tick by tick basis more easily than we do?
Well, I had a client ask that question this week, and I guess my view would be if you're willing to pay for it, but, you know, it costs us over $2,500 a month. Over $2,500 a month to run our quote screens. And, yeah, I'd love to have it free. That's how we look at it, because then our costs would go down. But
well, it seems to me that there would be an insider trading problem now that everybody now that everybody has access or could have access and buy access to the marketplace in terms of the computers and the pipeline to get those numbers there, that really the numbers ought to be made available to everybody.
They should. If you're willing to pay for it, I think that's 100% right. I don't think there should be any kind of scale.
Well, the question is whether the board and the mercantile exchange have a right to charge a premium for it.
For real-time versus delayed?
Yeah, well, whether they have a right to... Maybe the question is, do they have a right to delay them?
Well, and that's a valid point. All I'm saying is if you're going to make a real-time person pay, then the guy that's delayed, there should be delayed quotes if they're not going to pay what the real-time person is paying. So as long as you make everything an even playing field is how I look at it.
Yeah. Well, it just a pipe that I went down, a little rat hole that we
did. Sure. I think the biggest thing that we've seen since the board and the Merck merged is we're already seeing costs go up. We've just got a letter from our quote provider that the rates are going up on clearing fee, you know, on the data, on the real-time quotes, starting January 1st, anywhere from $10 to $20 a real-time complex, whether it's corn, beans, or wheat, or whether it's cattle and hogs, and even the NYMEX is jumping in there and raising their energy quotes for real-time. So we can see this consolidation is the same as what it was in the telecom industry and the cable industry and any other industry that you get into. As there are fewer and fewer providers, they can charge more and more and more, because nobody's going to come in and compete against them.
We appreciate your time with us today.
Okay, Todd.
Mike Zuzulo is with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Friday afternoon. In a few moments, Dave Dickey will be here with all the day's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for the representative nearest you.
In agricultural news, Republican leaders in the House and Senate say the lame duck Congress will run just 1 week, convening on December 4th. That likely means that critical ag bills, including WERDA and disaster aid payments, will have to start from scratch in the next Congress. American Farm Bureau Executive Director of Public Policy Mark Maslin.
It is especially difficult or increasingly difficult to get them to do large items. I think the prevailing thought is they have to do the spending bills. They have to come to some resolution on how they finance the government for the next year, whether it is finishing up the appropriations bills or passing a continuing resolution or some sort of an omnibus spending package. That's the one thing that they have to do.
Lawmakers reportedly will seek passage of a continuing resolution to keep government funded through February 15th. A Purdue University economist says there is likely to be a major shift in emphasis in agricultural policy when the new Congress convenes next year. Alan Gray believes Democrats will focus heavily on extension, environment, equity, and energy. Specifically, Gray thinks Democrats will extend ag support program payments from the 2002 Farm Bill, give greater emphasis to the Conservation Security Program, level the playing field between producers who receive large subsidies and those who receive smaller or none at all, and write an energy title. South Korea says it will cull another 609,000 chickens in an effort to contain the spread of H5N1 bird flu. That brings the total number culled to 764,000. More than 6.7 million eggs have also been destroyed. South Korea culled about 5.3 million birds during a 2003 bird flu outbreak. USDA's latest projections puts net cash farm income nationwide at nearly $67 billion. That's higher than USDA's previous projection, but below levels in 2004 and 2005. USDA Chief Economist Keith Collins.
We've seen an explosion in crop market prices this fall, and as a result of that, we're seeing much stronger cash receipts in the second half of 2006. We are estimating that cash receipts for all commodities will be $242 billion. That would be an all-time record high. Most of the gain is coming from crops, where crops we expect to be up about $7 billion over last year.
Collins says record high production costs are cutting into net income.
Cash expenses are about $211 billion for 2006. That's up $11 billion over 2005. With energy-based inputs, farm labor, interest, and farm-based inputs leading the way. On the farm, we're seeing higher feed prices, for example, and that's part of the cost of producing livestock.
USDA Chief Economist Keith Collins. Smithfield Foods says second quarter net income fell 13% due to weak pork prices and tighter livestock supplies. For the quarter ending in October, the world's largest pork processor posted net income of $44.7 million, or 40 cents a share, down from 46 cents a share a year earlier. And New York City is poised next week to ban trans fats from restaurants. The city's Board of Health is scheduled to vote Tuesday on whether to force city restaurants, from fast food to upscale, to eventually remove all but a trace of trans fat from cooked foods. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Today's Dave Dickey, of course, is your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find a way to subscribe to our weekend newsletter and an early edition of Commodity Week, which is recorded on Friday afternoons at 4:30, posted to the website by just about 6 o'clock in the evening. Don't forget, you can also subscribe to our podcast of the Closing Market Report, the pre-opening and opening market reports, and Commodity Week. It all happens at willag.org.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Ramada Hotel, featuring a heated indoor pool, in-room high-speed internet access, in-room microwaves and refrigerators, a continental breakfast bar, and jacuzzi suites. The Ramada is located off I-74 and North Lincoln Avenue in Urbana.
Joining us now to take a look at our Friday afternoon cash grain market is Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Grain Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, we heard just a little bit about the break in the soybean market, at least the basis along the coastline. Can you tell me more about it today?
I'm sorry, didn't get you there, Todd.
That's okay. Okay. Tell me about basis for soybeans in your area.
In our area, actually, we've seen the basis improve over the course of the week. There's been a little bit of spot demand on the rail market. Bean movement right around here has been relatively slow over the last week. Now, my feeling is that there are a lot more soybeans as a percent of the crop sitting out there to be sold than there is corn. So that will be hanging over the head of the basis out here for some time to come, that there are beans and there's more beans out there, so you can see more basis pressure on the soybeans.
As the higher prices, and I hesitate to say the high price, but the higher price of bean and corn begun to bite into the export market as well as you can see?
So far, no. Sales have been very good. We're way ahead of where we were last year. We're ahead of, you know, percentage-wise year-to-date on export sales, better than what the USDA is forecasting as an increase, but I don't think you can count that as a one-to-one gain. You've got a finite amount of exports that are going to happen, and what you see is coverage being pushed further and further out. So I think you have buyers here in October, November, December buying their needs out into the spring and summer rather than waiting until spring and summer to buy corn.
What do you see in terms of your area as far as producers needing to make sales for tax purposes? Is that going to happen this December, or are they pretty well set for the year?
What I am buying now of old crop corn is for Jan payables. So it looks to me like things are pretty well set. And, you know, there was enough corn sold at higher levels than people ever expected that the income's getting pushed into next year right now.
And then tell me about your bids for the day, please.
We are at 373 at Paxton for December corn. Soybeans into Paxton are 659.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Friday afternoon. In just about 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with Steve Hilberg. Your local newscast comes up next.
Look at AM 580 News. I'm Tom Rogers. A wintry blast that struck Illinois this morning has been tapering off in much of the state. Some areas have a couple of inches of snow. Others have more than a foot. The National Weather Service reports 15 inches of snow, for example, in Peru, which is northeast of Peoria. The messy combination of sleet, rain, and snow made road travel treacherous. Motorists across Illinois are getting stuck on unplowed side streets or sliding into ditches. And many tree limbs are down, and the ice has toppled some large trees in some spots.
Ameren says it may be some time before customers get their electricity back in some cases. The utility has crews working overtime as well as crews borrowed from neighboring utilities, helping restore power to nearly 235,000 customers in Illinois at last word. Most are concentrated roughly along Interstate 55 from Bloomington Normal to the Metro East area, with Decatur also seeing a rash of outages. Spokeswoman Natalie Hammer says Ameren is still getting reports of outages as trees or power lines weighed down by ice give way. She says some crews are also having trouble getting to outages because of treacherous roads. After more than 6 months of training, the Illinois State Police have graduated 54 new officers. Cadet Class 112 today was the third to attend the Illinois State Police Academy in Springfield yet this year. The officers went through a 26-week training period where they went through physical training and classes including terrorism awareness and firearms training. Governor Rob Blagojevich says 220 troopers have graduated from the academy under his administration. Federal Homeland Security Director Michael Chertoff says an anti-terrorism center in Indianapolis will help more quickly detect threats. Chertoff visited the Indiana Intelligence Fusion Center today. It opened back in March and is one of 20 centers across the country. In Illinois, state health officials credit a new booster vaccine with a sharp decline in the number of Illinois whooping cough cases this year. There have been 472 pertussis cases so far this year in the state, down from 922 cases last year. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on AM 580 WILL Urbana. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Steve Hilbert, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Interesting start we've had to the month of December 2006.
Boy, it certainly was. Quite a lead out of November with very warm weather and very mild and actually very pleasant weather. Didn't even rain with a lot of that warm weather. And then yesterday, pretty much everything but the kitchen sink. We had heavy snow, we had icing, we had sleet, we had thunder and lightning, we had everything together, and heavy rain, and the result is quite a wide swath of snow across the Midwest and Illinois, all the way from southwestern and western Missouri and through Illinois and up into Wisconsin. Heaviest amounts here in Illinois were out in Bureau and Putnam counties, where they had about 14 to 18 inches of snow. Princeton had 18, Hennepin had 14, a number of locations, Putnam and Hancock and McDonough had a foot. So quite a bit of snow out there, which in many respects is good because that area has been rather dry the last several months. It's been one of the more persistent drought areas in Illinois, so this will be a big shot in the arm to the soil moisture in those areas. And then, of course, down in this area, we just got a little shot of snow this morning. So, it's quite a storm, and it looks like we'll be sort of winter-like for the next several days. It looks rather cool and probably the next week or so.
Let's deal with the snowbound areas just a bit. Will it be windy in there, those areas, and for how long?
The winds will start dying out this afternoon. They're already starting to drop off. We're seeing the strongest winds with the storm now in western Indiana and Ohio. By tonight, the strongest winds will be up in the northwestern and northeastern parts of the state, and as high pressure starts pushing in and that low moves out. And then probably by tomorrow morning, things will be pretty tranquil as we get some high pressure building in over the area. So windy problems in those areas that are still having problems, probably just a couple more hours and things should start to calm down.
You suggested winter would be staying with us. Of course, it's December. That sounds like it ought to happen. But is it more ominous than that?
No, I don't think so. It's going to be cold next week, and I don't think a little bit colder than it would be for this time in December, but the outlook looks like it will probably get some moderation after next week and maybe return to near normal or above normal temperatures for a short period. And we could get a little shot of snow in the middle of next week as a couple of clipper type systems come through. But although it'll be cold next week, it looks rather benign and fairly quiet week.
And let's wrap up and go back and take a look climatologically at the month of November. How warm was it in comparison to history?
Well, if you look at the month as a whole, to be honest, it really wasn't remarkable. It was mostly the last week and a half or so that was very warm. Temperatures in Illinois really ranged from about near normal to slightly below in southern Illinois to about 3.5 maybe 4 degrees above normal in far northwestern Illinois. Here in the central part of the state, we were about 2 degrees or so above normal, because we had a fairly cool first half of the month, and then, of course, that unusually warm weather at the end, so it all sort of balanced out. And then, of course, with the precip, last week here, we got quite a bit, so we were in good shape there.
All right, we appreciate you being with us.
All right, Todd.
Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey right here in Champaign County. That is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to join us tomorrow morning at 11:30 for Commodity Week. It's our weekly analysis of what's happening in agriculture. Craig Parr, Central Hedger for the Andersons, will join us as our guest. You can pick that program up tonight if you'd like, right there on our website at WILLAG.org, not long after we've recorded it. It should be posted by about 6 o'clock this evening. Have a great weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Daly Farms Incorporated, Arthur; First National Bank and Trust Company, Clinton; GCOM Incorporated, Savoy; and Tepper Electric, Champaign. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.